Hey everyone, and welcome back to Lisa at the Edge. This is a bonus episode. So far I have been publishing an episode weekly, but I thought I would give you an extra episode. On this episode, I'm joined by Will Rowe. Will is a leading specialist recruiter in the Azure space, author, speaker, occasionally cracks a good joke, an all-round funny guy. In this episode, we discuss how to engage with recruiters, how to approach the dreaded salary discussion, the different types of recruiters, and how specialist recruiters can help you long-term in your career development. We also chat about, you guessed it, personal brand, being authentic, using video content to reach your audience, and of course, some good banter. Enjoy. Hello, Will.
Hey, Lisa, how are you doing?
I am okay, thank you. How are you?
Yes, I'm good. I'm good, thank you. Today's a better day.
Today's a better day, of course, because you're on the Lisa at the Edge podcast.
It's all I've been looking forward to for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
That's all I can say. What a perfect way to kick off your week.
Exactly, yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me. Much appreciated. A few of the things. So actually, before I mention what I'd like to talk about, can you just give a little bit of an introduction to yourself? I think that would be good.
Sure. So I'm Will Rowe, and according to people close to me, including myself, I'm the UK's leading Microsoft recruitment consultant. Nice. Thank you. I have been working in recruitment for nearly 21 years now. I wrote a book, and that's about how to get a better job in IT. So I kind of do on and off sort of talks about stuff like this. I'm on LinkedIn a lot, where if you happen to follow me or be connected to me, you see videos that I put up with unfortunate humor. Thank you for that. So that's kind of me in a nutshell. And I'm a recruitment consultant, and I train people in the recruitment industry, and I work with people to help them get a better job, basically.
Wonderful. Just a sort of little side note, you know, if my boss is listening, like, I've not got Will on today because I am trying to get a better job. I'm not looking right now. But going back to the fact that you are, you know, in fact, the best Microsoft Azure recruitment specialist within the UK, and the fact that my podcasts and episodes so far have very much been aligned to the Azure community, whether it be just, you know, careers in tech, which aligns greatly, or the hybrid cloud space, I thought it would be an excellent idea to get you on. So a few of the things that I would like to discuss today would be around recruiters in general. Like, what's the difference between all the different types of recruiters? So generalists, internal recruiters, specialist recruiters. How do we best engage with recruiters? What does the process look like? And how can you use a recruiter, to your advantage to find that perfect job? You know, what's the benefits of using a recruiter over not? I'm struggling to say recruiter a lot fast.
It's fine. You're doing very, very well. Normally recruiters, people spell recruiter as a four-letter word. So I think you're doing very, very well.
So I'd like to
just a quick note to your boss, Lisa, in case he is watching. We met when she was drunk, so that was different. You know, we were at a conference, and you know, it was a love of alcohol and technology that brought us together. That was all it was. Nothing extra.
It's where all the best conversations happen, where the best relationships are made. In fact, meet at a conference where I was drunk, and I think I was, you know, preaching about Azure Stack Hub, potentially.
A lot of talking, very fast, and a lot of your no's in there as well, I noticed.
Yeah.
You know, or sure's, sure, you know, that was very exciting.
Don't point that out now, because I'm worried that I'm going to do that. So going to talk about recruitment. We're going to talk about how to move forward within your career. I know that your book title, for instance, has a very awesome title.
Thank you.
Do you want
can
to
you remember it?
Yes.
You can't remember it, can you?
Yes, I can. It's Evolve or Die. Okay.
There we go. Evolve or Die, the new rules for your IT career.
Exactly.
It's been a number one bestseller on Amazon for information technology. I don't like to brag, but you know, I'll do it. It did very well when it was free. Not so well when people have to pay for it, unfortunately. But that doesn't take away from the fact that there's a load of stuff in there around how to build a personal brand, career development, how to engage with recruitment consultants, and also more importantly, how to cut out recruitment consultants and actually start dealing with the people who are likely to be hiring you moving forward.
And I think, that the message is one that I can very much get on board with. Evolve or die, I think, if you've not been living your IT career like that for the last little while, well, you're probably dead and not listening to this podcast, or this will be your savior and you will be able to continue on. So, okay, let's just get stuck right in to talking about recruitment and recruiters.
Sure.
How to engage with them. So I think in our sort of prep chat for this, we did talk about how the relationship is very transactional, right? It's a very naturally transactional relationship. You have a role which needs to be filled. You need to find someone to fill that role. Ideally, obviously, you want to make a good match there. But what are some of the elements of those transactional relationships that make it go really well for both parties? Like, how should you engage with a recruiter to ensure that you end up with something that works for you?
I think the trick is to try to step away from the very transactional nature of recruitment. It's a very difficult area to kind of talk about broadly, but what I think we tend to find is you've got kind of two or three different types of recruiters. You've got people like myself who tend to be more specialist in an area, and that means that we're aware that we're working in a niche space and that we need to make sure that we're building relationships and we're networking with the people who work in that space. Then there's the more sort of generalist recruiters who work in an agency, and rather than having, let's say, a technology area or technology specialism, they'll have a number of customers or key accounts that they're recruiting for. And what tends to come down the line from them could be anything from an Azure architect through to a desktop support person through to a salesperson through to a back-end developer through to, you name it, it could be anything. And so that person's job doesn't require them to be in the market and understanding who the sort of the key players are. Their job is to be a source for CVs to their customers. And then you've got sort of internal or talent level people. And they are frequently, although they're aligned to the HR function, they're frequently people who have come out of the agency side of recruiting. And again, their jobs will be less specialist generally, unless the organization is particularly specialist in itself, at which point hopefully they'll be in the market and doing stuff kind of like that. So because of the transactional nature of recruitment, I think it's important to understand who you're dealing with when you're dealing with a recruitment person. If you're dealing with someone in an agency, if someone's a generalist, then they're not going to be as able to discuss the market. They're probably not going to be able to discuss salary levels, trends in the industry from a technical perspective. And all they're really going to be interested in is getting that CV across to their customer And often they frequently on that level there tends to be bulk hiring going on. So it is it's more a case of okay, let's get CVs out into the hiring managers.
So the first thing that you should do, and I'm sure everyone can relate to the numerous mails that you get in your LinkedIn inbox, if you are, you know, if you are open to and you're looking in the market, the first thing you should probably do if something looks interesting is probably establish what kind of recruiter they are and therefore what they will be able to answer and what they will not. Also then identify, because if you're saying that they sort of might do some initial checks and then pass the CV through, they're maybe not the person that's going to then really look at the CVs and pick from there. So you probably want to understand from them exactly what their role is and if you can speak to someone, if you need to, someone else, and maybe to get more detail on the role.
Yes, and that's not to say that more generalist recruiters aren't able to get you a job. At all, and I don't certainly want to take away from the work that they do, because it's almost a more difficult job than my job, because they have to be able to talk to people across a load of different technical areas, often with limited information and understanding. So you almost kind of need to cut these guys and girls a break, because they sort of need almost that extra help. There is also but there is also sort of a level of person that is often referred to as a researcher or a resourcer within the recruitment world. These are often people who are very junior, maybe just getting into recruitment, and they'll be spending time kind of just trying to source CVs. And they'll maybe pick up the phone, have an initial conversation with you. And then off the back of that, they'll pass your CV internally to somebody and say, look, I've got this person, what do you think? And they'll have got like a basic level of information from you around, you know, what, you know, are you looking, what are you looking for, what sort of rate are you on or salary are you on, and what are you looking for, and just a few sort of basic things. And I think often it's dealing with this level of person which is where a lot of the frustration comes, because I think if ever I'm called and somebody's trying to headhunt me, I expect them to know about the role. I expect them to know about, you know, the company, and to be able to have a sort of a conversation with me about me. And frequently that's not the way that recruitment consultancies are actually set up. Especially in contract recruitment, you're up against deadlines, you're up against sort of a difficult, often very competitive market. And that then means that actually it's more about speed than it is about quality. So identifying who you're dealing with and the kind of person is a good way to take, I guess, a level of frustration out of it. But it's also important to understand what you want from a relationship with a recruiter, because if you're just testing the market, going to a generalist recruiter is not the way to do it, because they're really only going to be recruiting against a specific role. If you're interested in finding out more about, you know, what's your worth to the industry, what hiring trends are we seeing, what's hot at the moment, where is the sort of the growth areas, then you need to come and talk to someone like me. And there are probably about a dozen people in the UK who do similar sorts of things to me, and they're fairly prominent. My colleagues Chris and Joe, who work within, you know, who own Hancock and Parsons, they do very similar sort of stuff to myself, without the rugged good look. But it is very much you can generally tell who is actually a specialist by first of all checking out their LinkedIn profile. Who are they connected to? Do they have any recommendations on LinkedIn? Are they engaged in anything community wise? You know, Hancock and Parsons co-founded the UK Azure User Group, which is the UK's largest Azure user group, back in 2011, I think it was, with a couple of MVPs from ElastiCloud. I've started with another MVP, the Kent Azure User Group as well. I speak up and down the country at various different user groups. I'm going to be speaking in June at the Glasgow Azure User Group with Sarah and Gregor. And so it gives certainly me, it gives me a level of understanding about the industry around what people are paying, what people should be earning. And that's often a difficult conversation if someone's particularly under. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to maybe let's talk about some like do's and don'ts when it comes to recruiters. And I think that's an area where everyone just really doesn't know what to do. Unless you've been through it a few times maybe and you've begun to understand how it works. It can be really daunting when someone asks you, what are you expecting to earn? If you really don't know what you should be earning. So you might have an inkling that you are underpaid, or you might think that you're really well paid and actually that no one would ever pay you more, and that, you know, you might just not have the data, or you might not speak, like, loads of people don't speak about money, so you might not, you know, have an open, honest conversation with your friends and colleagues that are in the industry. So how would you go about that? Because I'm sure that people, they always think, you know, how to approach that conversation. And what advice would you give for that kind of conversation? And is it different when having that conversation with maybe a specialist like yourself, who actually it's much more of a relationship and networking type of engagement rather than a transactional, and therefore maybe is a little bit more sort of long-term thinking as well? Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. Yeah, totally. If I was looking to engage with a recruiter on a speculative basis and understand more about, you know, what my value was to the market, I'd find someone who recruited for multiple positions in my area. And by talking to someone who can explain to me that actually these five companies have been hiring for my sort of role over the last 6 to 12 months, and these are the kind of salary levels that they've been paying, that would give you a much better understanding of my value to the market than kind of putting up, you know, licking a finger, putting it in the air and kind of going, okay, I think it's going to be sort of around here. Where it can be a more difficult conversation is where you've seen an advert with a salary band between 60 and 85 or 70 and 90 or something. And that is sometimes where the difficult conversations come, because, you know, I'll be speaking to somebody who feels that their worth is 85, but to that employer, because they don't have perhaps a certain level of information or of experience, or they haven't done something particularly, that their value is not worth more than, say, 75. And again, that's where hopefully having somebody who knows a bit more about the industry will be able to explain why you're not worth that. I would always be very upfront about what you're earning currently. If some people refuse point blank to say what they're earning currently.
Really?
Sometimes. And I kind of understand that because they're, I mean, this is more prevalent a few years back, but they were saying, look, you know, it's not about what I'm earning now, it's about what my worth is to the market currently. But then the challenge can come whereby, you know, if someone's earning 50 grand and they're saying, okay, I want 80.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to justify that sort of an increase to an employer. And at some point, the employer is going to be asking, if you do get the job, it's going to be asking for a P45.
Yeah.
So they'll be able to see what you have earned previously. And it's as much about managing the expectations of the employer and the job seeker as it is, you know, in terms of our job, as it is about actually finding the right person, because we can find the right person, but if they're not interested in that salary level and they're being quite cagey, it makes our job even more difficult to actually get that person through the door. And our job is difficult at the best of times.
I suppose if you're not, so I can see why you maybe wouldn't want to share. So for instance, if you know that you're already wildly underpaid for what you're doing, and you know that actually there are other positions in the market, and actually your worth in the market is more, but because you're going in and sharing your wage right now, like you say, it's very difficult to make that often difficult to make that jump. So I can understand why people wouldn't want to share. But you're right, the practicalities of it and the fact that, you know, then what are you having your conversation around? Like, I kind of feel like you just need to get that out of the way. You need to, you need to share it and then also have a discussion about what you think. So if you think that is underpaid, maybe ask for some feedback. Ask for, you know, what you could be expecting and what would be the best way to get to a role that will pay you that worth. So would it be by taking a smaller jump? And then working, you know, once you're in that company, setting objectives, et cetera, going through the salary review process? Or would it be, you know, maybe you're not desperately looking for something right now, so you're prepared to wait for that company that might come along at some point that is in real need of those skills. You know, you've got the skills and actually you are the person and you have the right attitude and the aptitude, et cetera, and they might be willing to pay more of that jump. And then I suppose that's where maybe with specialist recruiters it does become more of this relationship and this networking and just catching up and checking in every now and again to see how the market is moving. And on that note, actually, so our tips from this section would be: find out who you're dealing with, sort of understand who you're dealing with, and then set your expectations around what kind of conversations you might be able to have and not have with that person. And depending on who that is, then understand what information they might have in terms of the market that you're operating, whether they will or they won't. When it comes to specialist recruiters, it's about networking, it's about relationship, it's about sharing. You can definitely, it sounds like, get in touch with someone like yourself and say, look, I'm doing this kind of role, I'd really like to get to this place at some point, you know, what does that market look like? And then I suppose when it comes to these the sort of dreaded salary discussion, just gotta bite the bullet, rip off the plaster, be brutally honest, and then operate from there rather than trying to guesswork and potentially muddy the waters.
I think as well, if so much of what we talk about, and salaries really doesn't play a big part for me anyway, in the discussions that I tend to have. It's always a factor, but people, in my experience, people don't move jobs for money. It's more about, okay, opportunities for career development into something slightly different or a bigger role or something. It could be around technical training, you know, updating skills, or it could be that you know, that move into sort of management, or you know, like maybe that C-level type opportunity away from the sort of the technical piece. And I think that is where a good recruiter is going to be able to have those discussions with you, because you might not know how to get there. So I had a discussion with someone last week who is an Azure, he's working for a small Microsoft partner. He's an Azure more support person. And he was saying that, you know, my goal is to become an Azure architect. And he's at the support level, and an architect is probably two or three jobs away from where he is now. And so a lot of the conversation was around, okay, how do we get you there? What sort of role do you need to be keeping your eyes open for? And then giving him advice on what one he can be doing personally to kind of broaden his skills and kind of get, it was basically all around projects, you know, getting more involved in the project level and starting to leave the support level behind. But nobody had sat down and explained to him, okay, these are the mechanisms by which you have to do this. And also his CV, although his CV was very, very good, didn't reflect any of the project work that he'd done to date. It was still written more as a sort of a support type CV. And so that can be very, very valuable from having a, you know, a conversation with a recruiter is kind of what to do and how to sort of get there. I've been dealing with people for a long time, and what happens is people that I first spoke to 10-12 years ago, even longer ago, you know, they're now, you know, they've sort of in permanent roles, come up for air every 2 or 3 years, had a chat with me, I've placed some of them two or three times. But otherwise, you know, I'm giving advice on their CV. I'm giving them advice on kind of what they need to do next. And that's I think is really important to move away from that transactional bit. And often, you know, some of these guys now are the Microsoft MVPs in the industry across a number of different areas. Or, you know, they're now in sort of hiring positions themselves. So there's, and again, that's that move from transactional into something longer term. And it wasn't done with an eye to the future. It was just something that I started talking about. And people just, you know, started coming back.
I think there's a few things there. So one, I absolutely agree, especially in our industries, people don't move for money. That said, as an aside, I know a lot of people who are wildly underpaid for what they do, because maybe their company isn't at that point yet where they appreciate their skills, and they could definitely, just by making the move, drastically improve their income. However, I agree, I don't think that that is the main driver. I think, like you said, moving to a company who's going to like put you through training, certifications, allow you the breathing space to be part of the community, for instance, you know, get you to go events, understands the value of learning and bringing that back into the business. I think all of those kind of stuff, or just being able to, you know, sidestep into an area that's really cool, that's been, you know, interesting to you. I think that's very true in our industry. The second thing I was going to say was back to the CV then, right? So here's the two points on this. The CV and the whole sort of raising your head every now and again, having a look around. I really think that that is a very healthy thing to do when you've been in a job for some time. You might feel frustrated, or you might just start to, you know, feel a bit like, something's not right, or do I want to do something else, or do I not? The best thing that you can do is actually go and look, maybe engage, you maybe have a first interview or, you know, whatever, but then you might realize that actually, and obviously this isn't great for you guys because it might be wasting your time, but going through that exercise and then realizing that you are actually better off where you are can then give you another year or two of really appreciating and enjoying your work. Whereas I think a lot of people tend to live in this like little turmoil in their brain about, oh, I really wish I could do something else or whatever, but they don't ever go, and sometimes it's really healthy to just check, you know, is there something out there better than me, for me? No, there isn't. Cool, I'll keep, you know, watering my own grass kind of thing. So I think that's a good and healthy thing to do. Would you agree? And then let's come back to CVs.
I think when we're talking about technologists, I think that there needs to be a trigger point in everybody's role where you sit up and you go, okay, I need to start having a think about if this is right for me in the long term. The pace of change in the industry means that what you're doing 1 month to the next could suddenly fall behind what the industry is doing. And actually, your employer, unless you're working as a contractor, but your employer, if you're in a permanent role, is really only interested in giving you the training which is going to be good for them. Because ultimately, you're an employee, you're paid by a company, and they'll put you through the training which, you know, although it's good for you, it needs to be good for them.
Yeah.
And it'll, you know, to help them with their environment or their products or the services that they offer. So I always kind of, I liken it to, it's not a dead end, it's a career cul-de-sac, which is where it's actually really nice. You know, everyone likes living in a cul-de-sac. You know, you can have barbecues and what have you, and it's lovely. You know, you're well paid, you're quite happy, and all that kind of thing. Whereas, but actually, it's now, you know, it's at that point that you need to start saying, okay, well, when was my last technical training? And when was the last time I got an opportunity to work on a project which is relevant, because it's all about staying relevant in this changing industry. Your job is not the one that you're paid for. Your job is actually to stay current and relevant in the industry as the technology changes, usually at pace. And it's to stay up to date, and it's having this this mentality of embracing change, which a lot of people struggle with. I mean, personally, I hate change. You know, mm-hmm. if you talk to my wife about that, she would just be laughing hearing me say this. But I think it's in technology, it's absolutely critical to ensure that we're training and we're staying up to date on the latest updates, the latest product releases, because otherwise the rest of the industry will be moving forwards and you're sitting in your little cul-de-sac enjoying it, getting paid, you're quite happy, but the rest of the world is passing you by and then you are in danger of becoming obsolete.
And I also think that more and more now, especially with us, you know, it's not just technology, it's in this cloud world. Yeah, cloud is not a thing, it's a model. I like to say cloud is a mindset. You can't just sit there and sort of say, I mean, well, you can if you absolutely want, but if you're just going to sit there and be like, well, my employer won't put me on that course, or I don't get any time to learn or whatever. I think the more that we have this cloud first strategy, it's what everyone's doing. Companies want to be seen to be doing it, even if their C levels don't really understand what it means, let's be honest. But they will yep. start to turn more internally to their tech teams to be like, right, guys, like what, right, we need to go to cloud. So how are we doing that? Like, and they're like, well, I've just been working on, you know, I was about to name a technology there and I'm not going to do it. Because
begin with a V. Yeah. Okay.
Let's just move on. I can't do that now. But it's true, right? Because previously releases and updates came, you know, months, years apart, etc. That's been speeding up for a while in the virtualized world, to be fair. But when it comes to cloud and things like Azure and even AWS, etc., it's rapid and you do need to be up to date. And I think that you owe it to yourself, and it'll put you in a good position as well when those conversations do happen, if you're making sure that you're keeping that up to date. Whether that be in your spare time, I know we all don't have spare time, you know I live by myself with my cat and therefore have all the spare time in the world, especially during lockdown. I know everyone doesn't have their spare time, but I think it's all about priorities, and whether that is you having a conversation with your manager about the fact that you'd like to have some time to be able to do that, or it's making and carving out that time in your personal life. I think you absolutely have to be able to do that these days. I think we've seen over the last God knows however many years, peaks and troughs of the expert, yeah? So, you know, there's a time where actually everyone went for the expert. If you're an expert in XYZ, that's fine. All you had to do was be an expert in that one topic because your mate next to you would be an expert in, say, storage, and you would be, you know, and then you'd all kind of stay in your cycles. Where I think now it's about being a generalist, but an expert in learning, an expert in knowing where to go to get the information that you need and knowing where you need to go to next. And also this kind of understanding a little bit about everything. You know, when you move into Azure and you start to do VMs in Azure, when you're setting up VMs, you're responsible for setting up the network. You don't then pass that on to someone else. It's just a completely different way of working. And I think that's not just about who you are professionally and what exams you take, right? That's a lot about self-development. Like you say, if you've been a person that's hated change, you know, rolls around to update and you're like, oh my God, it's update time. I hate change. I've got to use this new tool. Like you say, evolve or die. But that's a lot more to do with self-development and learning how to embrace change to your benefit.
Yeah.
Went on a little tangent and a preach there, but...
Wow, you know, I feel you've made a difference to me.
Okay, good, you know. Good. But can we just go back a second actually to CVs, right?
Yeah.
I hate CVs. I hate them.
I'm not a fan.
No one keeps them up to date. You know you don't keep them up to date. You suddenly get into a conversation about a job and you think, oh my God, I need to update that CV because I need to send across this CV. And you then think, right, I need to try and slightly tailor it for this job, which, by the way, everyone, you should at least try and do. But I wanted to know how much CVs still play a role in the process. And do the old school roles of sticking to two pages, etc., work are people submitting more flashy type different formats? What's the CV situation these days?
So, it is a can of worms which we've just opened here at Lisa, and I don't know. Yeah, not sure we're ready for this yet. Right, CVs are still massively important. Unless you are somebody who is very visible within your industry and who people know, then you still need a CV. Now, people will still get hired without a CV if they are a recommendation or someone's referred them internally saying, I know this person, they're brilliant, we need to get them on board. So yes, there is always that level. If you are looking for a job, the CV is the first port of call. And the whole purpose of a CV is to act as a selling tool to the employer. The purpose of it is to sell you to get an interview. It's not about getting you the job. It's about getting you through the door.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 pages is not enough. It's never enough. Unless you are a junior person or somebody who is a well-known figure, 2 pages just doesn't do it. Especially in technology, you know, you can spend the first page writing about the technical skills that you work with.
Yeah.
You know, and this is always a controversial point, as some people swear, you know, oh, it's 2 pages, and it's usually people who have got a job off a 2-page CV, as opposed to people that work in the recruitment industry. Because I think I've looked at in excess of like 150,000 CVs in my
wow.
career. I worked it out when I was writing the book a couple of years ago, as to, you know, on average 25, 30 CVs, 40 CVs a day, you know, and it takes me 3.5 to 4 seconds when I'm looking at a CV to decide whether I'm going to work with this person or not for the role that I've got. It's stunning, you know, how many CVs I've looked at, and it's not something I'm particularly proud of, because that's been my life, looking
yeah.
at CVs. Now imagine yeah. that. The bit which in particular stands out though is what we have as recruiters is the feedback from the hiring manager element that the people who are saying, oh, stick to 2 pages, don't have. Which is, if I send over a 2-page CV, it frequently doesn't have enough detail in
yep.
there to get that person the job.
Yeah.
Or the employer comes back with more questions. Sorry, not to get the job, to get the interview. The employer comes back with more questions.
Yeah.
Which could have been answered if it was a slightly longer CV. And we frequently ask people to send us just a quick mail with, you know, the detail around the bit which is the most relevant to the hiring manager that we can put into the CV, so that bit, and that's when you were talking about tailoring. It's stuff like that which gets that person the interview.
Yeah.
And 2 pages, just unless you're a more junior person, it just doesn't cut it. Because
I always found the 2-page thing hard, and I think that I think it's more to do with being. It's not about whether it's 2 pages or not. It's about whether you can be concise and clear and succinct and get across, you know, the roles that you've had, the responsibilities they included, the impact that you had, and the experience that you gained. If you can do
yeah.
that succinctly for each of the roles, but it goes on to 3, potentially 4 pages, surely that's so much better than barely saying anything on 2 pages. And like you say, having to have this back and forth, which I don't think is ever good for either party involved, really.
I totally agree. And think about it from a hiring manager's perspective. If a hiring manager has got 2 or 3 agencies that they're working with, for example, and those 2 or 3 agencies send 3 or 4 CVs, that could be potentially 12 CVs that are sitting in their inbox. You're going to go with the ones that slap you in the face as opposed to the ones where you've got to ask questions.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think David Brent said it Bess in the office where he said, I put half of the CVs that come across my desk in the bin because I don't want to hire unlucky people. You know, that's a whole, but you know, you're almost talking at that sort of level with some recruitment. You know, if 12 CVs come in, the hiring manager will look at them, they'll probably scan them, and the ones, you know, scan through them, and they might take a couple of minutes doing that, but the ones that they're going to interview are the ones that effectively sell the person.
Yeah.
And if you're a technologist with a reasonable amount of experience in your career, trying to keep it to two pages just doesn't do it.
It just
won't do it. And I think as well, it's important to try to make sure that you're focusing your CV on the last 2 to 3 years and bringing out the technologies which are most relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we go much past sort of 2-3 years back,
yeah,
the technologies become less and less relevant, and then they become obsolete and legacy, and there's just very little point around having loads of information in there. That being said, I've seen 12 and 15 page CVs, and that is just way too much. You know, that turns people off straight away. So I would say sort of no more than 4 or 5 pages, but having enough detail, having enough high level information, and then sort of deep dive, sort of drill down to talk through projects, to talk through,
mm-hmm,
you know, all that kind of stuff.
That's a nice idea, actually. So instead of sticking to like the traditional format, you could have like 1 to 2 pages of very high level detail, but then you could almost refer out to be like, for more information on this project, you know, there's half a page.
Yeah, I think people are still very traditional in their view of CVs, hiring managers generally. Yeah. So making sure that you're in reverse chronological order, mm-hmm, you know, most recent stuff first, and having something like a description of what your job is, having some of the more deep dive stuff in there under that, maybe some projects that demonstrate the kind of work that you do, which is relevant to the hiring manager, is good. And then, you know, go back again and go back again, you know, for the last 2 or 3 roles.
Can you, and should you, refer to things like LinkedIn? And how important is that these days?
We are going off to the big topics here. LinkedIn is incredibly important. Having a link through from your CV is very good. If you've got a blog, get that on there as well. If you've got GitHub, get that on there on your CV and on your LinkedIn profile. If you are somebody who has a home setup as well, we were talking about, you know, how do people transition from one role into another if they don't necessarily have the skills. If you're somebody who is doing extracurricular learning, mm-hmm, and staying up late at night with labs and sort of demoing stuff and making it work, get that in your CV as well, mm-hmm, because that's particularly relevant. That shows a certain mindset, and people would really rather hire the right sort of person than the right technical skills. So LinkedIn is massively important in recruitment. It's almost seen as a bit weird if you don't have a decent LinkedIn profile these days. But LinkedIn is not a social network. LinkedIn is not anything other than a personal branding and marketing site for you. So you need to treat it like that. You have to think about what it is that you want to be known for, because you mentioned the specialisms, you know, the age of specialists in the past. We're in the world of mini celebrities now. And I say celebrity with a small c. You know, if you are somebody who wants to become known for something, you can start writing about it on LinkedIn. You can start creating video content about it on LinkedIn. You can bring out the elements in your LinkedIn profile that best reflect that sort of stuff. I mean, you work with Azure Stack great deal. So I would fully expect to see that on your LinkedIn profile all over there as being somebody who is a specialism in that Azure Stack space. But it's not the be all and end all for you. It's just what you are passionate about and what you enjoy doing. And that's how you want to be known to the sort of the world. And that's what LinkedIn allows you to do. It allows you to connect with like-minded people in different organizations. People will start to follow you if you start creating content and putting it out there. That could be through your blog. I wouldn't say ever do the articles on LinkedIn because you just don't ever get anyone coming to that. But in terms of writing posts that appear in people's timelines, you know, putting stuff out there which is topical, which is relevant, that drives like-minded people to you. And if you're using the hashtags in the same way that you can on Twitter, people will follow those hashtags on LinkedIn and it'll start putting stuff in there in their feed, and it'll be your content that they start reading. And frequently from there, and frequently from there, what you'll find from a recruitment perspective is, if you're connecting with like-minded people, if you're following them and they're following you, or connecting with them, and you know, you're all using the same hashtags, then their hiring managers at some point will start hearing about you, which will then open up opportunities for you in, you know, that often recruiters don't even see.
Yeah.
Because hiring managers go to their networks first and to their team's networks first.
Content,
at which point you might not need that CV.
Yeah, content is really, well, they've always said, right, content is king. It's always been king for marketing. Yeah. You just need to take that to yourself, like you say, realize that you are a brand, you are your personal brand. It's about marketing and sharing that brand. That's something that I have always been aware of, but I've just cringed around and I've really struggled with, but I am trying to get better at. I'm trying to find a way of doing it whereby I don't cringe, i.e. like I'm trying to do it very authentically, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm doing very much because, yes, I do work with Azure Stack Hub at Dell Technologies. We have the best one, just an FYI. But I work with
Azure. I think
we are actually the best. Just like you're the top of your recruiter in the UK.
At least I say that I'm the only one that says it.
I'm sure our customers would agree. No, but like I say, that yes, that is my job, but it's also like one of my passions. I'm really passionate around the Azure Stack portfolio, the Azure hybrid story. I love it. So I'm happy to share the knowledge on that. And I think once I kind of got over that, it was fine because I'm sharing the knowledge and I'm putting out content and I'm discussing something that I actually really enjoy. It's removed all the cringe around the building a personal brand. It's maybe not removed all of it. I'm very like nervous and anxious about putting out things. I'm still very much trying to find my feet. Twitter is a great place for our community, awesome place for networking, sharing the knowledge. My Twitter has, since lockdown, I've put a lot of effort into obviously this podcast, my blog, and my Twitter. My Twitter account's blown up. I've got loads of new followers. Hi everyone. it's actually been such an amazing place. Like, that's where I was able to share my podcast. Someone listened to my podcast because someone else shared it and then got in touch with me and asked me to co-host a talk track for Global Azure UK and Ireland. You know, this is how it works, really. So you definitely do need to put yourself out there. It can be nerve-wracking, but yeah, I think really taking the time with your LinkedIn is important. And again, that's something I've started to try and do. So I've been saving like my posts that are important to feature on the top of my profile and starting to look a bit more at the features, etc. And it's funny because I'm doing that now and I'm not looking for a job, you know? So previously I maybe thought, oh, I should update my LinkedIn because blah, blah, blah. I might want to move soon. Whereas now I'm just doing it for me and for my personal brand. And I'm sure that in the future that will benefit me. I think that's all very important. And I think that's been a really good discussion. I hope people have taken something away from that. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about was trends.
Before we do, I just if we can just go back just a sec. So this idea of personal brand is just, it's a horrific term. It's awful, right? And a lot of people feel like you do around when I talk to them around, well, what have I got to say? You know, and then they feel nervous and they feel worried about, creating content.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Content itself could be as little as sharing what other people are blogging about. You know, the sort of the thought leaders, you know, getting that out, you know, sharing, giving your thoughts on it as well. Do you agree yeah. with them? Is it slightly different? It could be creating a brief video as you walk down the street. There's a Microsoft MVP called Tom Arbuthnot who's got a blog called Tom Talks, and he does lots of vlogs as part of it. And he's always walking down the street, and we always mock him greatly because his camera's all over the place and stuff. And it should be called Tom Walks actually, but he's like literally it's a minute and a half as he's walking down the street. It doesn't have to be this massively produced thing.
Yeah.
It can be, you know, and bizarrely, some of the stuff which I'm almost most proud of because we spent so long doing it. Back at Christmas, we did the team and I did a video at Christmas.
Yeah.
And it was all of us sat there and my son was in it and it was bad interviewing and all these different characters and stuff. And that got me fewer views and likes than I think a 2-minute video that I did back at the start of December on something.
Yeah.
And it's never the thing that you think it's going to be. You know, that thing, I was sitting there going, this is genius. You know, my son's in it. It's fantastic. It's got multi-camera angles. I edited the whole thing. It took me about 12 hours. I put it up there and it was just like, people were just like, wow, that's really good, Will. Yeah, excellent. Well done. But nothing else. Do you know what I mean? I was sitting there going, oh my God. So it doesn't have to be this. It can be anything as long as it's relevant to you. And I think that there was a word you used earlier, which I think is so important, around authenticity. You cannot create a sustainable persona if it's not you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah. I think there is always a case of having a I guess a sort of a stage persona, a stage face. You know, when I'm on video, I'm always a little more me, and everything's bigger than perhaps I am. You know, and that's the Will that kind of, you know, goes for the laugh, that goes for the humor, which falls flat frequently, which does so much. You know, but that's kind of what I want to be known for, is that slightly exuberant. I kind of liken it to. So I just want to be as excitable as a puppy, but slightly self-meaning and just a little bit, you know, on the verge of risque at times. And so that's kind of what I all sort of, you know, wrapped up in. But you've got to be authentic. You've got to be yourself. And actually the two, my two colleagues, Chris and Joe, started putting out their first videos in the last week or two. And yeah, and they were, you know, they were really nervous about that, you know, and rightly so, they were awful, those videos. No, I'm joking. But you know, but what I think they found massively empowering was the fact that actually they put themselves out there and they took a risk, and people are reacting really positively because that's what people do.
Mm.
And there will be people, you know, at times that come on who are a little bit trollish, or, you know, who sort of are, but that's what the block button is for.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't have time for people like that. You know, you're never going to convert people like that, so just block them.
Yeah.
But being authentic and being yourself, I've never been more happy in my working career as when I'm being me.
Yeah.
And I think you go back 15, 20 years when I first got into the industry, it was all about professionalism.
Yeah.
You know, recruiters need to be more professional. And I think the world has changed since then. And we're now after authenticity in people.
This is the thing that I think that I kind of struggled with. So I think I'd always thought about putting out content and I wanted to be part of the community for a long time, probably like 2 or 3 years. Initially, I struggled a lot with, you know, well, what do I have to say? What do I have to offer? I'm not a techie in that sense. Part of it was just fear as well. So then when I decided to start doing it this year, another part of me was like, I need to stop saying that, was like, another part of me thought or was concerned or worried about the fact that I've now been in my career for some time and sharing this stuff it will be very amateurish. Yep. So it'll be very much I'm starting, might not, you know, my blogs might not look as good, or my podcast might not be, you know, have perfect like song introductions and be like a full-blown production. Or I was thinking if I did a video, you know, it might not be as polished. And I was concerned that, will that hold me back in my career? Will I need to at some point play the corporate, you know, kind of line? And then I basically realized and thought to myself, I would never do that anyway. So even if it got to the point where I had to act a certain way or play a certain game to like get up the ladder and, you know, companies that are larger or might kind of expect that, I'm never going to do that anyway. I will always, you know, be authentic, because like you say, it takes time and energy to have another persona. That's going to slip at some point and you're not going to be happy living your life like that. So I kind of just decided to throw it out there. It is what it is. It's funny, I feel really like, so I'm 33 next week. I know.
Oh.
Got the face of a 20-year-old.
35. Sorry, oh, late 20, maybe 29. Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah.
Last year in Ibiza, someone said that they thought I was early 20s. So to be honest, I'm taking that. But I was dark. Tanned. We were on the White Isle. Alcohol was involved, sure. You know.
Yeah. It was.
But but this is
lighting.
It's funny. I kind of have this thing in my head about, well, I'm going to be 33. Like, do you really want to start putting out blogs and YouTube videos? And, you know, like, is that not going to make you look, I don't know, behind in your career? And you have all these kind of thoughts go on. Do you know what I've realized? When I put out content, people share it, like it, that's great. If they feedback and tell me that it's good, that's awesome. If people said they enjoyed the conversation or whatever, that's great. For all those people out there who are not responding or hating it silently, I honestly don't care. I put it out and I forget about it and I feel good because I'm doing it for me to push myself out of my comfort zone, to learn new skills, etc. So I think if you have the right mindset and the right reasons for doing a thing, whatever that thing might be,
Just gotta do it. I absolutely agree. And I don't think age should ever play a factor, because I mean, I'm 42 now, and I don't look a day over, you know.
I thought you were younger than me, Will.
That's why I'll come back again. I first starting doing videos when LinkedIn gave me the functionality to do it, because this was going back 3 or 4 years, I think. And it was, I've never really been a YouTuber, or, you know, I've never really been on Insta or all that kind of stuff, and I'm frankly, yeah, I hate Facebook. And I just, you know, I've just come off it. I feel very free.
Facebook,
you know.
down in the ladder.
Yeah, you know, yeah. They're the devil. Anyway, but it has revolutionized my career, because I wanted to bring a human face to recruitment and to humanize what is often seen as a fairly cutthroat industry.
Yeah.
And it also coincided with the fact, I mean, for a year or two before that, I'd been going to meetups and user groups up and down the country, and getting to know people, and building those relationships there. And now I'm seeing more and more people in recruitment starting to do this. And what's interesting is that this is now being almost commoditized again. So whereas before, what I was doing was kind of, you know, a bit leading edge, you know, not many people were doing stuff, and certainly no one does the kind of videos that I tend to. They're a little bit more professional. But now there's a wave of people turning their videos on and just starting to do that. So I'm quite interested to see what the sort of the next wave is.
Yeah.
You know. Lots and lots of people got podcasts. I mean, you have. Do you know what I mean? So it's there's so much out there and different ways to do this. But I think that you've done exactly the right thing. Personally, I think you've done exactly the right thing by making it about you and stuff that you're interested in. Because that was always my thing. I was always trying to go for the laughs and have some fun and, you know, get people chuckling and what have you. And that's the bit that I enjoy. You know, the fact that other people, you know, laugh at it occasionally is actually quite a nice thing. And actually people get in touch saying, you know, that was a good one. Or well, my mum does. But, you know, that's a separate, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sorry, I completely moved us away from, what you were talking about.
Don't worry. I think that's another thing that also put me off as well, because you're seeing people now. It's like, have I been too late in getting started? Because so many people now, you know, their videos are getting better and better. Their content or production or whatever they're doing is getting more professional. But there's no point in comparing my chapter one to someone else's chapter 10, you know? So I'm going to get there if I decide to do that. Video is the one thing that I haven't tried out. I think I've got on a bit of a roll with my podcast, so that's great. I'm doing the odd blog, and that's good. And so I was thinking, will I try video? I am going to. I'm just going to have a bit of a think about what I'm going to do there. So maybe it'll be more of a personal update, and it's, you know, once a month or whatever. It's just a little roundup of the podcast I've done or something like that. We also need to wait until I get my proper webcam, which is stuck in the parcel post situation of COVID-19. I don't know where that is. But yeah, I think I'm still going to give it a go. I told myself at the beginning of this, I would try all three and then I would go from there. So yes, I was going to talk about trends, etc. However, we've been chatting for a pretty long time. So what we might need to do, Will, and I could ask the listeners whether they'd like us to come back and talk about trends in recruitment and maybe how to make the most out of the situation right now, or maybe what to do if you're in the unfortunate position of not having a role right now because of COVID-19. We don't really need to wait for them to answer with a yes or a no. We could just record that because we would enjoy doing it. I think that's been a really, really great discussion. I suppose we could just end on how are you coping with COVID-19 from a work perspective and a personal perspective? Because obviously it's hit the recruitment market, right?
So recruitment is a challenge. In a good market, recruitment is fantastic. In a bad market, recruitment is an absolute nightmare. I'm lucky in that most of my customers tend to specialize in helping people work remotely. So we recruit for Azure people, but actually a large part of what we do is around Office 365, Microsoft Teams.
Yeah.
So we've got that breadth. So we are still seeing roles come through for Teams consultants or user adoption or change people, or, you know, people who can help users use the tech more effectively for collaboration and what have you. That has been a real challenge. This is the third downturn that I will have worked through. We had the .NET bubble bursting in 2002, and then there was the financial crash in 2008-2009. And it's a mindset thing more than anything. It's being able to, and I struggle with this, it's being able to kind of go, right, well, this year is not going to be the year that you thought it was going to be. You've just got to kick yourself in the ass and keep going as much as possible. It's difficult.
The sooner you can accept where we are and also learn to focus on what you can control and what you can't control, definitely makes a difference.
Change. Change, isn't it? I'm lucky. I live with my wife and my son, and we've got we live quite in the middle of nowhere, so we've got quite a lot of outdoor space, which is lucky, you know, in comparison to a lot of people I know. It's not lucky for my wife, it turns out. She's been socially distancing for a few years, it turns out. I was worried that our relationship was going down the pan, but no, that's fine. It's just she was just getting some practice in. But it's it's like today, this morning, started off really well, hit a speed bump, fell on my ass, you know, in terms of my mindset. And then I had a Teams call with my team just after lunch, and that really sort of picked me up. But it's almost like I'm feeling the ups and the downs so much more.
Yes.
And because I'm asthmatic, I'm not leaving the house really at all. We have a woodland near us, where we can go, and you know, it's literally a half mile away, so we can walk into the woods and go and do a bit of a loop and stuff. But I haven't done anything other than sit in the house and work or go for a walk in the woods for 9 weeks now, I think it is, pretty much. It's just getting to me.
Yeah.
But I'm fine. Fine with it. How are you finding things?
The ups and downs are definitely getting closer together. So
yeah.
And I think I might have mentioned this on my last podcast with Izzy, but there was a couple of calls the other week, and I basically just said, I said on one call, it was a team call full of people that I don't even know, I used the words, I am losing the will to live. And do you know what? That was accurate at that time. I was losing the will to live. The ups and downs are getting closer together. I think it's getting harder to drag yourself out of the downs. That said, I gave myself a bit of a kick up the arse last week, and I went and got a walk in before work every morning from Tuesday. I went on big walks at the weekend. I made myself organize calls with my friends. And just kept busy. I actually have stepped away from Netflix.
Good choice.
I think it was not good. This week I'm going to, went out for a walk again this morning, and I'll do that all this week. And I'm also going to start to participate in those home workouts.
Joe Wicks.
No. Nope. But I'm ready. I'm ready for the gyms to open again. I won't ever take them for granted. For the past 2 years, I've been an absolute sloth. Like, I've just completely let the fitness thing go. And now that it's been taken away from me, I'm like, nope, I need the gym back in my life. So I bought 2 5-litre water bottles at the weekend. And I'm going to attempt to use them as weights, because I can't get my hands on any weights. The UK is sold out everywhere. I would just like a dumbbell or a kettlebell, please, if anyone has any.
Do you know what we're using? Do you know what we're using? Because I started doing this last week. We've got a particularly heavy shovel. It weighs a ton. So you can only do one arm at a time. But, right, okay. We've been using our particularly heavy shovel.
A good home workout option is towel rows. So put a towel over the top of your door, and then put your feet in, and then close the door. Put your feet in close to the door, lean back, put a hand on either side of the towel, and then you can do rows for your lats.
Right, you're going to have to demonstrate this to me.
I've got no idea.
I'm going to end up dying, you know, because
I will look up a YouTube.
Get whipped in the eye by a towel, Elle. And yeah.
I will look up a good YouTube video and I'll send you the link.
Excellent. And maybe that could be your first video that you put out. Yeah, home workout.
Not in this current state. That's for sure. Okay, well, let's wrap up. If listeners are still listening, well done. This has been an episode and a half, so thanks for sticking with us. But thanks so much for joining me, Will. I really enjoyed this chat.
Likewise, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. See you later.
See you. Bye.
Bye-bye.